My name is Peter, recovered alcoholic.
Hey, Peter.
I'm grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thank Scott and Mike and the rest of you guys for having us here to share our experience, strength, and hope about this power called God, this big book, and this sacred fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I get excited when I get the opportunity to share about the good news and talk about the spiritual transformation that was freely given to me by following a few simple rules laid out in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988. I'm a recovered alcoholic, and I say that because I am. And anything less than that great fact would be falsely humble. It is the first promise in the big book, and I've come to talk to you about that from a place of experience, experientially talking about what it's like being recovered. And all the while knowing the way I got recovered by God, I can get unrecovered if I don't continue to do the things and work with spiritual disciplines. June 23rd, 1988, I was separated from alcohol in the back of a hallway. I was homeless. And that particular day, I wasn't planning on quitting drinking. I had quit many times. I'd stopped many times, and that lasted about 15 minutes, and I had to go get drunk again. 1988, that wasn't the plan. I came to with the hideous four horsemen surrounding me, and the courage to do battle wasn't there anymore. I couldn't do it, and I felt another drink would kill me, and if I didn't drink, I would die anyway. And I was faced with this dilemma. And I was in a place of despair. And despair is, I have found, a necessary ingredient for us to embrace the spiritual path. To walk a path we never walked before, do a methodology we never experienced before, and to have an experience with this power called God that we don't know. And it's only through desperation, despair, and quite frankly, the fire that burns in your soul to know God that will keep you putting one foot in front of the other. I was looking for that something, that okayness in the bottom of a whiskey bottle for a long time. And I caught it a few times, like most of us do. That's why we returned to it, because it always worked. But at some point, it turned its flight like a boomerang, and it wasn't working anymore. I was drinking just to breathe. In 1988, I had no idea what I was going to walk into, called Alcoholics Anonymous, and the gift that was given to me. So I get to talk about that. I get to talk about going from the scrap heap to a level of life better than the best I've known to where I am with you tonight and this weekend, in the place of hopefully having some integrity and being a member in good standing of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I do these things, and I get to do it with Marion this weekend, sometimes I'm a one-man band, I do them alone, and sometimes I have someone with me. But I will tell you on the front end, I know some cats out there who do workshops, and it's about a us-against-them mentality. Big book is against non-big book, and that is not where God has brought me. And I'm not here to do that weekend. What I will do, as God directs me, is perhaps challenge some current belief systems to see where we currently are. Because that's really where we need to take a look at. Where are we currently? When was the last time I prayed and meditated? When was the last time I sought God to desperation for drowning men? Is my relationship with God the most important relationship in my life? Is my prayer life the most important event of my life, or one of the 10,000 things I'm going to do that day? When was the last time I shared inventory with the sponsor? Who am I accountable to? How consistent am I? How responsible am I to the new drunk, to the people around me, Alcoholics Anonymous? To talk about where we are currently. But my deal is to challenge. That's how God feeds me and hopefully feeds you, but not to split the room. And not so we go out from here and go back to our home group and start ripping up people who never had a big book in their arm. That's not a spiritual path. That's a war starter. And one thing about I have found on the spiritual path, we can be as passionate, even borderline aggressive with the information, and challenge people with the spirit of love and tolerance. Because if I beat people up who don't do the book, they're never going to come to me for help. And Don used to always tell us it's attraction, not promotion. Right? So I'm able to go into the most sordid spots, and I've been into some sordid spots in AA. I've gone into the crack houses and the shooting gallows and pulled the dope fiends out and cleaned the drunks up off the street. over the speed of 11 pounds in the big book under my arm, walk softly and carry a big book is how I was brought up in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can shout that from the rooftops, and I can get right at you about it, but it's not I'm right and you're wrong, especially when I do these, because I'm not of service to you when I start doing things like that. So let's challenge our belief systems. No right and wrong, no up and down, no left and right. That's none of my business. But perhaps through the weekend, if you're not doing inventory, and I'm talking about inventory, or you don't have a prayer life and a life of meditation, and I'm talking about that, not me against you, not right, not wrong, it's just perhaps we can go home and say, hey, maybe I need to do that now. Maybe you'll ask some questions about it, how you could improve it. Awareness is the greatest agent for change, and so we need to raise the level of awareness and pull the blinders off. The truth is true until we find out it no longer isn't. So I walk with some belief systems that I think are the right ones, that I think the ones that are making me who I am, and all it is the ego feeding me some more, because they really don't work. So a question to consider on the get-go is based on what I've done thus far, how's that working out for me? What I've been doing the last 6 months, how's that working out for me? What I've been doing the last year, how's that working out for me? Am I experiencing page 52, current unmanageability? Am I experiencing feeling some restlessness, irritability, and discontentment? Is the undercurrent of my being this fear? Am I still speaking with fear, hearing with fear, seeing with fear? Are my actions are fearful? Do have that uneasiness, that feeling intimidated around others rather than walking shoulder to shoulder? Do I really have a relationship with God, or do I have an acquaintance with God? Is my recovery based in abstinence or spirit? Even though I know the book and talking about the book and quoting pages and quoting paragraphs, I can tell you what the commas are and where the periods are in the book. But as soon as I leave the meeting, I look like a drunk without a drink. I mean, how am I doing? How am I doing in my home? Am I an AA angel and a house devil? How am I doing? How am I on the job, whatever I do for a living? If I'm out of work, am I hitting 15 meetings a day while I have a family to support? Or am I looking for a job? That's practicing principles in all my affairs. I go back to what's my relationship with God look like. When was the last time I wrote nightly review? When was the last time I sat in a meditation and gave attention to this God? Do I practice fidelity to my God? Or do I have other gods before my God? Do I practice fidelity in my relationship? And I don't, and I claim to be a spiritual giant in AA. No, let's talk about that one. Maybe we shouldn't. What's my current unmanageability look like? Is my recovery based in abstinence spirit? Am I in a place of resistance or acceptance? Am I in a place of living with resentment, or I have a spirit of forgiveness? Am I passionate about this, or am I walking with impending doom all the time? You know how we do that, right? We show up to an AA meeting with Moses. Oh, as soon as we walk in, how you doing? I'm spiritual. It's beautiful. 20 minutes ago, I was kicking a dog, kicking a cat, and fighting with the wife. Here's something I'm going to throw out. Marion knows what I'm going to say. I do this all the time. How many folks drove to this little retreat house? Mm-hmm. Yes. Monastery, I'm sorry. How many people drove here alone? Anybody? Okay. You drove here alone, you drove here alone, you drove here alone. No, you did not. You're lying to me. I'm going to tell you why, because this is what most of us do. No one drove here alone. Even if you had someone with you, you had other people with you. Think about the ride over here. How many people were talking to you up in the head, and how many people are you arguing with up in the head? Right? And when you go back in the car, those 45 people, they're waiting for you in the car right now. Labor Day weekend, you decided to get spiritual? What's wrong with you? That's current unmanageability. If we think about the ride over here, we have the chatter of 1,000 voices going on at once. And what's really frightening, because I've been there, we argue with them. We answer them back. We have delusions of grandeur, low self-esteem. And we go back and forth. And we're restless and discontent. And we're cutting people off. I got to get to my meeting. You drive up to the meeting, bolt right out of the car, no prayer. Just bolt right out of the car, go into the meeting. You walk in. How you doing, Joe? Great. Absolutely wonderful. I'm so grateful to be here. Life is just absolutely wonderful. Beyond my wildest dreams. But an hour ago, you looked like a lunatic in a car. You sounded like one of you talking to people who aren't even there. Mark, my sponsor, before he passed, you ask any alcoholic how you're doing. We always say we're tired. The reason why we're tired, because we're talking to 45 people every minute. Constantly talking to people. And that's a really good gauge for me, is where I am spiritually. Am I still fighting a fight from the past? Am I still driven by voices from the past? Am I still driven by unresolved resentments from the past? Do I still have outstanding amends that I'm consciously aware of that I haven't made from the past, but I'll get to it tomorrow? Because I really haven't had a spiritual awakening as the result of these 12 steps. If I have a boatload of unfinished amends that I could be making without causing more harm, and I haven't because I got things to do and life is busy, I'll get to it tomorrow. I'm starting to play God now. All that stuff is the ego reemerging once again. It's starting to do my thinking for me. I'm seeing with the ego instead of God. I'm hearing with the ego instead of God. My actions are egotistical instead of one of humility. And I don't know it, but you see it. And as soon as you confront me, I'm going to push back all current unmanageability. No shame in that. No right, no wrong, no up, no down, no left, no right. It just is. What are we going to do about it? If I have resentments that haven't been resolved yet, no resentment's acceptable or unacceptable. If the doctor said, Pete, you have a little bit of cancer, I'm going to say, let's get it out of there. It's going to kill me. Yet with resentments, we keep them. Not that bad. We minimize and justify and rationalize it away, and it starts to grow. And the same way we go forwards through the steps, we can go backwards through the steps. Take a look at step one, considerations with step one, body, mind, and the spiritual disconnection from God, the spiritual malady our book talks about. We look at two, another consideration, make a third step decision into four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, enter the world of the spirit, and then we get so comfortable we start to rest on our laurels and the ego starts to wake up. See, the ego doesn't die. Even though we grind it into dust, it never dies. You can't kill it. It goes dormant. The mind goes dormant. And given the right opportunity, it'll start to breathe and wake up, and it starts to reemerge. And the same way I went forwards through the steps, I start to go backwards through the steps. I really don't have a sponsor, I have one in name only. I kind of sponsor men that are becoming annoying. I have more affairs than principles. Prayer, meditation. Meditation's long gone. I check in with God like he's the Holiday Inn. I start to pray on my way to work instead of hitting my knees and asking God for mercy. In fact, one of the best things I can do to God is beg for his mercy and hand him my shortcomings or my sin, my missing the mark. Probably two of the best gifts I can give God. God doesn't need to hear me say, God, I did great today. Because he's the one who made me great that day. Step 10, gone. I'm not making amends promptly. In fact, I'm waiting for you to make amends. I'm not speaking to anyone about it. I still have outstanding amends that I'm not fixing. 8 and 9's out the window. Defects of character are showing up again. And I think self-will can manage them. I think I can control them. And they're glaring. And they're causing me dis-ease and discomfort. I really don't have a sponsor to talk about it. And as far as turning it over, I'm God. Turn what over? I'm running the show again. Insane thoughts starts to come back. Not the drink just yet. But I start to go on sex sprees and food sprees and money sprees and fear sprees and thinking sprees, because I'm always thinking. I'm figuring everyone's life out and I'm playing God. And I know you're talking about me all the time. So I'm completely consumed with me again. Totally selfish and self-centered, self-seeking, self-absorbed. The ego's reemerged. And my life is now unmanageable. It starts to unravel. And I emerge from these trees with the firm resolution not to go back into that sex spree again, because if he or she finds out, I'll be divorced. I'll be mortified in AA. And I need to do something about this binging and purging issue that has shown up. I need to do something about working out in the gym 55 times a week. I need to do something about hoarding money. I became a money a hoarder. I got to make more money. Got to make more money. Save more money. Make more money. And I do that, become a workaholic. It's another spree. And I'm thinking. I'm not praying, but I'm thinking a lot. And it gets so uncomfortable. It gets so painful. Like before we got in here, that life hurts again. Life is like pricking my skin all the time. It hurts. It feels like an ice cube being dropped down my back. I can't do this. And the food sprees and the sex sprees and the money sprees just aren't working. The mind says, I know what will work. And just like that, we pick up a drunk. And people say, where's Joe? He's gone. But he was here yesterday. He was here last week. And the way to go forward is through the steps. We go backwards through the steps. What I have found that this path, now stay with me on this, is a forward journey backwards. Not backwards through the steps, spiritually speaking. It's a forward journey backwards. As I move through the steps, and I get disciplined to the spiritual life, what happens, we return home. The process of recovery is about removal, never addition. And what happens is we return home. Home to what the Oxford Group talked about, purity, honesty, unselfishness, and love. At one with this power called God, able to wear the world like a loose garment, feeding others, and somehow I get fed. My most important relationship was with God. It's a forward journey through the steps, but it's actually taking us back home. I'm not reinventing myself. Our book says get reborn. We get resurrected. Reborn, I can never go back into mama's womb and come out again, but spiritually speaking, we get reborn of the spirit, a renewal of the mind through this metanoia, this purging the death of the false self and experiencing what God created all along. It feels like a new me, and to some degree it is a new me, but it's the path God put me on way back when. And free will takes me off the path. And it can take me off the path tomorrow morning. On any given day, I'm capable of doing anything if I'm not spiritually fit. That I'm clear about. I'm sober 27 years now. I don't have a lock on sobriety because I'm here and I do this a lot. It's a daily reprieve, a stay of execution. What a reprieve is. Every day, based on my condition, my relationship with God. So I get to pray to God. I get to do meditation. I get to call a sponsor. I have a sponsor, Mickey M. from Colorado. Every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, I sit on the phone. I call him. It rings. He says, hello. He's never not there. I don't take any speaking commitments on a Wednesday. Unless it's an anniversary or a special occasion, then what do? With 27 years sober? Mick, I was asked to speak. Can we skip Wednesday's phone call? He will say yes or no, and I follow along. You get it? But that's what I do. I have my scripture, I have my inventory book, and I have my big book, and off we go. Sometimes we cover inventory, sometimes we cover scripture, sometimes we just talk about life. Marion Early was talking about a difficult week. I buried a 27-year-old client of mine who hung himself because he just couldn't do this. And last Thursday at noon, I had a dead body on my hands, and I was completely broken apart, torn apart, because the illness usually wins. Why am I shocked? The illness usually wins when it comes to folks like us. If we took the entire world of recovering people, recovered people, in every fellowship that there is, it amounts to a grain of sand on a beach compared to the people who are dying and losing to this illness. And I get to sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and talk about beating the illness a day at a time. The age of miracles is with us. But I need to participate in my recovery. I need to participate in the journey. I need to chop a lot of wood and carry a lot of water. I need to plow the field and God will do the growing. I need to get my hands dirty. I need to get my hands on a drunk. So I get to talk about some of that stuff. But it all goes back to step one. You know, if I'm having an amends problem, and my sponsor showed me how to do amends, share with me his experiences with amends, I have my 8-step list, and I'm not making amends or I'm making a few and stopping, I don't have a 9-step problem. I don't have an 8-step problem. I don't have a 6 and 7 problem. I got a step 1 problem. If I'm not doing 10 and 11, my sponsor has showed me the information, teaches me how to pray, teaches me how to meditate, teaches me how to continue doing inventory at night, and I'm not doing it, I have a step 1 problem. Here's what goes on. Step 1 says we admit we're powerless over alcohol, that lies have become unmanageable. 43 pages plus doctor's opinion addresses this issue. 43 pages, because they knew Pete Marinelli was going to come in, and he says, one chapter for this guy, he's from New York, it ain't going to work. We got to hit it again and again and again. 17 to 23 is the body. 23 to 43 is all about the mind. which is the big deceiver, the big trickster. It is my personal demon, my own thinking mind. Main problem for me centers in the mind, not in you, my mind. No one gets me drunk but me. No one takes me on a sex spree, a food spree, a money spree but me. No one makes my life unmanageable but me. We admit it repels over alcohol, dash, that our lives had become unmanageable. They're talking about past tense. This is what, when they wrote this, this is what it looked like, right? First 40 or so, Bill was obviously the author. The essence of the unmanageability is that on any given day I can pick up a drink when I least expect it. On my way home from work, Monday, get home. On my way home from work, Tuesday, get home. On my way home from work, Wednesday, get home. On my way home from work, Thursday, I make a turn and get in the bar. That wasn't the plan. I just got hijacked. What was going on? I wind up in the crack house. I wind up in the cop and drug. How did that happen? That was not the plan. My plan was to go home again, go to my meeting. I got hijacked. The essence of that word unmanageability for me is not knowing what the day is going to look like when the illness says go and we go. Knowing that once I start, I cannot stop. That I don't have power, choice, control before the drink, and I don't in the mind and no power, choice, control in the body once I start. Knowing all of that, based on my past experience, my mind says, one more time. And we obey it. If anyone has a God problem in here this weekend, you really don't. Because we all have a God. It's called the mind. Because whatever it says, we do. Think about the escapades of being out there again and again and again. I don't know if anyone's ever OD'd in this room, but as soon as you get released from the hospital after an OD, what's the first move you make? Go cop. Go back to the bar. That was a mistake. What else would you call it but insanity? But what happens is we get stuck, I did, on the second half of the first step in unmanageability. And we forget that the essence is really about, if I'm not spiritually fit, I'm going to pick up a drink. Step one tells a guy like me, I am going to drink. Not that I can't drink. I can definitely drink. The problem is I can't have just one. I'll have a second and a third, and then I'm in a dumpster by the end of the day. But step one tells someone like me, the real alcoholic, the guy on page 21, you are going to drink. Whether it's today, tomorrow, 6 months from now, 10 years from now, you are going to drink. Unless I get the spiritual muscles in place and I work out in the spiritual gym and get my soul food. My soul seeks that which what it loves, God. But I deny it all the time. So I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, the desperation of a drowning man like most of us. And then what happens? We get a little job. We get a little AA relationship going. Right? Blind means blind. You're both going in a ditch anyway, but that's another topic for another day. Right? But you get the little relationship in AA going. You get a job. People know you. We forget that we all leak. We're all broken. By the way, if you come in touch with your humanness and your brokenness, what a great gift to know that. Once I get in touch with my humanness and my brokenness, that I need this power to heal me, I'm able to do so much more with my life. It's the denial of my brokenness, the denial of my humanness, that I'm really running life on self-will. There's something in Scripture that says, I'm weak flesh, sold unto the slavery of sin. I do the things I don't want to do. It's the brokenness. But only in our brokenness can the light shine in, God's healing light, and bring us back to life. So we're in AA a while, and we get the job, we get the relationship, have some money, now we're liquid, we're good. People in AA know us, we got a little commitment, doing a little talking. Wifey Poo lets you back in the house again. Everything's going even back in the bedroom. The goose hung high, we're doing pretty good. You know what happens? We get stuck on that, thinking if I can get all my ducks in a row, that if everything looks good on the outside world, if my external conditions are looking good, my life is now manageable. That's what I'm basing my recovery on. Keep everything looking good. Make sure the manicure is done every week. New shirt, got a nice suit. People say, hey, you're doing good. I'm dependent upon that. I become attached to your opinion of me. I start to worship my emotions. Everything's got to be good on outside of me. I get stuck on the second half of the first step. What my sponsors, all of them told me, that dash that separates the first half from the second half of the step becomes a wall. I can't even see the first half of the first step. that I'm without power, choice, and control. In my mind, I can't safely play the tape to the end, think the dream through. I'm doomed to drink because I'm a prey to my own mind. So I get stuck on the second half of the first step. Keep things looking good. That's how I was joking earlier about we're talking to all these people in the car, only in the mind. And as soon as you walk in, say, hey, how you doing? I'm great. You need to think I'm great. Because if you say I'm great, I think I'm great. Paying attention to that only. Don't even need God anymore as long as I'm managing my life. Life has now become my master, not God. And how can I serve God if I'm a slave to the world? I'm not living in godliness, I'm living in worldliness. When I'm experiencing the current bondage of self, I'm in serious trouble, I'm in deep water, but my ego says you're good because Joe says you're good, because Mary's attracted to you, because you still have a job. And then we get drunk. So by taking a look at the considerations in step one, no power, choice, control in the mind before I drink, and it will drive me back to, my mind will take me back to that which is killing me. It's my grave emotional mental disorder they talk about in the book. That of a mind that will take me back to that which is killing me. Sex spree, food spree, money spree, fear spree, whatever it is, it's a spree, and eventually you're drunk. Or a get high. And I don't have the power, lack of power is my dilemma, to stop that. This is alcoholism. This is powerlessness. I haven't picked up a drink yet, but my mind is taking me back to it. And then what happens once we pick up a drink? Marion tells a great story. Hitting bottom, get into detox, and 3 days later, I overreacted. I totally identify with that. The mind says, hey, Marion, what are you doing? You're really okay. You can have, let's switch from scotch to wine. We'll go on marijuana maintenance. You don't need to be in detox. Who is talking to her? Her own mind. I get that. And once I pick up a drink, it's called the phenomenon of craving. Any real alcoholic in here knows what I'm talking about. More is the drink. Have one leads to two. Two leads to four, and I'm on a drunk again. And then we have some folks who do this. I never experienced this. I get drunk, God forbid, tonight. I'm in a dumpster tomorrow morning. I just blow up immediately. But we get some folks who... 1988, we shared the same dumpster. I was living in the back of an abandoned building. And I said, when I get like those other guys who don't have a hallway to hunker down at night, then I'll do something about my drinking. But... we have folks who, you know, pick up a drink, go down to the bar after work, and have a beer with the guys after work, and go home. Just get out of treatment. Have dinner with the wife, stay home, don't go to a meeting, go back to work the next day. And he says, what happened to the craving thing? And then go to the bar the next day, see the guys, hey, I'm just going to have that one beer, cold beer, gets on a bus, goes home. Now he knows we're crazy. And my sponsor, Pete Marinelli, is a liar. He told me I'm going to experience the final craving. And goes to the bar on Wednesday, has one drink, goes home. Now he knows he's good. Thursday comes, he goes to the bar, has one drink, and says, you know what, give me one more, back that up. Has two. And then he has another, and the bartender buys him back. Now he's got four. Now he's feeling the juice. Now it's rolling. Now it's getting late, but he's drinking, and the craving is on. Now he's got to catch that bus. Not going to make it. Pour another drink. Joe, call my wife. Tell her I'm still stuck at the office. And Joe calls the wife. Now it's 9 o'clock at night. And he's talking to the barmaid. He's trying to pick her up. And next morning he wakes up in a hotel room next to the barmaid, who looked like Bo Derek when he was getting drunk. She looks like Bo Diddley right now. And we start. And what I have found is, whether it's one of those things that get us, over a week or two where we're gone, or it's someone like me pick up a drink and I blow up, once we light the fuse, we lit the fuse. And me and everyone who's a real alcoholic, our book says is pray to that. Pray to that unless I keep in fit spiritual condition. What am I doing about my soul food? How am I getting it? What am I doing about my spiritual muscles? I don't want to go too late tonight because it's already 9:30, but in a nutshell, 43 pages in my book talks about this. They slam us again on page 52 with more the barometer for current unmanageability as to where we are currently. That because I admit, accept, and surrender to step one, it doesn't mean I'm good. It's just a conclusion of the mind that, yep, I identify with these 43 pages. I identify with Bill Wilson. Yep, I identify with Fred. Yep, I identify with Jim. I identify with my sponsor. That's just like me. That's what Marion used to. I get it. I'm just like you. This is what I do. Okay, good. You're still going to get drunk. Mm-hmm. Because we've done nothing about the mind, which is my God. Mm-hmm. And it's going to pull me again to go drink. I'm without defense against the first drink. No human power can relieve me of my alcoholism. Now what? Our book, over and over, because it's aimed at the spirit. The book is not aimed at the mind, because that would be self-help. I'm not going to drink. I'll say that 10 times a day and I won't drink. If I pull that off, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm a heavy drinker. But the book is aimed at spirit. And over and over and over, with the considerations it gives us, even in two, which it kind of opens us up a little bit, it puts us in a corner with the consideration. What are you going to do? And I have found this whole path for me, 27 years, looking back on it, is a crossroad after crossroad after crossroad. Even growing and understanding and effectiveness, another crossroad. Is God going to be everything or nothing? What's my choice to be? I'm going to turn my will and life over to care of God, or just some of the things that I think are necessary. If I want to experience count and manageability, then I don't turn everything, and I mean everything, over to God. Because this illness permeates every single area of my life. Every single area of my life, alcoholism has infected. In order to get well, the spirit has to. I have to be wide open enough for the spirit to permeate every single area of my life. And most of us say, I'm going to turn it over. My life is unmanageable. I can't stop drinking. And what we want is just a little bit relief. We want God to touch a couple of things, but not the whole package. And I need to be in a place of complete surrender, complete desperation, where I basically, God, it's a do-over. Here it is. I completely mangled up this gift you gave me. I don't care if I work in the Salvation Army, work in the hills of Montana, plowing a field. I don't care. It's got to be better than the mess I've made. When I hear that from a drunk, I know they're ready. And any reservations, a lurking notion, they're not ready. I sponsor men. I say, are you willing to go to any lengths? This is what I hear. Well, that means no. You get so many cats around maybe 10, 15 years, and they won't tell you on the front. I just need a little, you know, spiritual discipline. I need a little tune-up. A drunk tells you you need a tune-up. They're right near a drink. So I want to know about them. And the first question I ask, do you have a sponsor? And same thing, do you have a sponsor? That's a yes or no answer. You know, yes, I have a sponsor. No, I don't. Do you have a sponsor, Joe? Well, you know, that means no. My sponsor, Mark, used to always kid around. You ask a guy, do you have children? Are you married? Well, let me explain this to you. Only alkies do these things. You know if you're married, you know if you're not. I knew nothing. I was in 7 treatment centers. I saw the chalk talks. I saw all the charts. I got in touch with my feelings. Trust me, I really wish I didn't. They explained my family tree, the dysfunction, the enabled, the triggers, all of that stuff. There's a place for that. And I kept getting drunk. 7 treatment centers. Never heard, really, what was wrong with me. Never identified, and I'm in the treatment center business almost all length of my sobriety. I'm not knocking that. I'm not here to do that. My here is to be helpful, to cooperate, not criticize them. But in 7 treatment centers, I never even identified with the therapist. You would think somewhere would say, oh, because they have these boundary issues. So 7 treatment centers, I'm getting a whole great education on the inner workings of my mind. And positive reinforcement, and positive affirmations, and charts and graphs. I learned how alcohol is broken down in my body, and the chemistry that takes place in the brain, and I really needed a double when I found out how sick I am. Until 1988 showed up when I was split wide open, and I was convinced, I conceded to my innermost self. And it wasn't a conscious thing like, I'm conceding to my innermost self right now. It was just despair that I can't get away from the source. I can't. I was drinking and eating Valium. I cannot get away from it. I want to and I can't. In fact, if I tried to, I'd get really ill. So I was drinking just to live. And then suddenly my ears opened up. And in my 7 treatment center, they sent me out to Minnesota. While I was in Minnesota, they took me to a meeting called the 3 Legacies meeting, and people talked about the solution after they talked about the problem in their story, in their testimony. And that's when I had the marrying experience. That is me. I get it. These people know me. Fast forward, I get a sponsor, and he breaks down the book. And what he did for me was start from the cover of the book. And what I mean by the cover, the old third edition, what this is, had the blue cover. Mm-hmm. I hate our fourth edition cover. It looks like a psychedelic cover. You know, it's politically correct cover. It's nauseating. I don't like it. What it's also missing, it might be in there now, was on the little fly page, it said this. But the basic text, pages 1 to 164, have remained unchanged. This is the AA message. Get it? This is the AA message. Not my opinion, not my feeling, this is the message. Now, if I had another life-threatening illness, and the direction said, if you want to get better, these are the instructions, and I'm faced with life and death, I want a book that says, these are the instructions on how to live. That's what my big book said. And that's where we started the journey. Then my sponsor showed me on the title page how it uses the word recovered. He says, we're not here to be recovering, because recovering is still experiencing the symptoms of the illness. Cycles. You cycle in and you cycle out. You cycle in and you cycle out. I'm restless, you know, discontented. I'm joyous, happy, and free. I go from here to the coffee pot. I go from happy to murder. I'm on the sprees. I'm experiencing untreated alcoholism. We're never going to get cured, but we want to get recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, the obsession. If the thought about drinking is not feeding me, then I'm probably not picking up a drink. And we can take that into those other areas of our life. The sex issues, the food issues, the money issues, whatever it might be. If my mind is not telling me to go do that, probably not doing it, all based on my spiritual condition. And I learned about the threefold illness. And we began this walk. How free do we want to be? If I'm sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous in bondage, my question is why? We get brought into the light, and most of us push it back. We get brought into the light again, and most of us push it back. How free do we want to be? And if we're experiencing freedom, or one of those guys or ladies who are doing the work and loving the effect produced by God, don't you want more of that? Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, but I was a glutton when it came to drink and drug. Just give me more. Just give me more. I'll pass out, come to, give me more. And yet I come into AA and put limits on how much God I'm going to get. I love the effect produced by God. And it's only because of the effect produced by God and the internal reorganization that I'm able to stay away from a drink. There's a state of consciousness on page 52, current unmanageability. There's another state of consciousness when we look at page 25, the great fact. There's another state of consciousness with the ninth-step promises, the 10-step promises. Same guy. Different states of consciousness based on my spiritual condition. Same guy. Same height. Same color hair, same guy. But what has taken place in here is vastly different from June 23rd, 1980 to right now. And every time we go through the work, we hit a different level, a deeper level of consciousness, more awakenings, more awareness. And I'll close with this, and I'll turn it over to Mary if she has anything. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, we were just talking about this with my first sponsor. I was one of those guys. And if you do this, great. who 1 through 9 into 10, 11, and 12, and you stay in 10, 11, and 12. And I start to hear this word maintenance, which means that just stay where you are. Just stay where you are. And if a river stops flowing, it gets stagnant and bacteria grows. It goes plaque on the soul, if you will. And when I heard people talking about before I got to Mark and that lineage, heard people talking about reworking the steps, I thought it was blasphemy in AA. And how I found out how I was starting to get untreated is because suddenly I had to defend what I was doing and go after them, outwardly or inwardly. And when they talked about these new angle on the steps that I heard before, I had to defend what I had and outwardly or inwardly attack them. When did fear show up? And I didn't like the idea of people talking about reworking the steps, multiple fifth steps, person or persons, plural, sitting with more people on this path to know about me, the freer I get. Never heard this before. This was blasphemy to me. I was brought up 1 through 9, 10, 11, and 12. My sponsor, first sponsor, started to unravel. Trust was broken. I prayed to my Heavenly Father, I need a new teacher. A gentleman from Texas shows up, and he says, we're going to go through the work again. And I was challenged immediately, and he told me, my job is to get you as independent of me as a sponsor as quick as possible, and dependent upon God as quick as possible, a new relationship with this power. And I started to, with some uncertainty, some skepticism, about doing the work again. I'll never forget this. Mark gave me third step considerations, gave me some questions. I remember calling him, and I was trying to talk faster than Mike can speak. I was lit up. The pilot light went on again. So I'm here to bear witness to the incredible experiences that some of us are denying ourselves by not reworking 1 through 9. Not rewriting the old 4-step, but taking a look where we currently are. 1 through 9 rocketing into 10, 11, and 12. More of the old self dies. Less self, more God, less self. And then growing understanding and effectiveness, that power will pull me 1 through 9 again, taking a look at some current unmanageability, some things that I unresolved maybe in step 4 that I wasn't even consciously aware of, developing a new relationship with God, maybe some new amends show up that I was completely in the dark about, get rocking into 10, 11, and 12. So I've been on both sides of the fence, and I like this side a lot better. I love the effect produced by God.
I just got preached happy. No, that's good stuff. I'm Marian. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Oh, yeah. So much comes. Thank you so much, Peter. So beautiful to work side by side with him. And so many times, you know, what we used to say back in the day, oh, you just 12-step me, you know. Thank you so much, you know, carrying the message like he does. And so much comes to mind, you know. I always say this to people, like, you know, if the big book breaks down the different kind of drinkers. There's certain hard drinkers, whatever. But if you're an alcoholic like me, it says in our book that no human power can relieve our alcoholism. And I found myself a year out of that treatment center, and I was doing life, you know, the job's back, the health is back, the kids are back, I'm going to PTA meetings sober, you know, I'm doing all that stuff, you know, and I was going backwards through the steps. I was sitting on a four step. I didn't do the fifth, and I was walking around with it, and I was going backwards, and I literally ended up at a friend's wedding. I was in her wedding, and that strange mental blank spot came. Strange mental blank spot came, and seriously, like, it was as if I was in a blackout. A glass of champagne was in my hand, and it was on its way to my mouth. And it's like I came to. It didn't touch my lips, but it was in my hand, and it was right in front of me. And the terror of that drink in my hand, in that state I was in, was horrifying. Like, horrifying, and you know, and I put it down and I ran out, and it says, like it says in the book, you know, I recoiled from it like a hot flame, and I was down at dry dock, and I got that fifth step done, and I was in, and it was like, whoa, God. And, you know, I was working with a girl this week, and I've taken her through the steps, and she relapsed, and I'm standing with her on the beach, and it's on her, guys. Like, it's on her. She relapsed, went out one day, and I'm standing there in front of her, and I found myself in that place of, you know, frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. Don't you know your mother and father, they're gonna die, you know? Oh my God, you just went home, you're getting your life together. Don't you look at how far you've come? And I found myself in that place with her, and I'm praying for her, and I said, you know what? There is nothing I can say, and there's nothing I can do. The only defense you have against that first drink, girl, is a higher power. And you need to go with God, to God with this, you know? And it wasn't, you know, and I'm telling her, you know, your relapse didn't happen yesterday when you relapsed. Your relapse happened way before that. When did you start going backwards? It says in our book, it's like the little boy whistling in the dark. It's cunning, baffling, and powerful, and it's going to trip me up any way it can. You know, it is never, there is no, we have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And if you are a drinker like me, you're a freaking miracle sitting in this room tonight. You know, we are people that should not be on a Friday night sitting in a monastery sober and talking about God. This is not what we do, you know. We're hanging, it's 9:45. Oh my God, where would I be by now, you know? It's like, whoa. And what this has to do with too, you know, this is what came to me. On the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who has many problems, be despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol. For the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules, those simple steps, this is a program of action. We don't just sit here and go, you know, I have work to do. You know, that means, I always look at it like this. Restless, irritable, and discontent, do I want that, or do I want to be happy, joyous, and free? And that takes some action, and that takes some work. And that means, I don't know. That's just what came to me when I was when you were. I can never finish a sentence right, but you know, you know what I'm talking about. We're miracles, and we're sitting in these rooms, and we're sitting in these chairs, and oh my God, we're here. Why? Because we can move forward in the steps. I already talked once, so I guess that's enough for tonight. Thank you.
Page 52 tells us this.
Yeah.
We were having trouble with personal relationships. Do I think I can manage that part of my life? Am I having trouble with personal relationships? We couldn't control our emotional nature. Do I think I can manage that? Am I having a problem in that area? We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. Do I think I can manage that part of my life as well? Or am I having a problem with that? We were unhappy. Can't seem to be a real help to other people. We were full of fear. They call this bedevilments, and the bedevilment I had to look up is something that torments, frustrates, and harasses me. If there was someone tormenting me, frustrating me, and harassing me, I'd probably dial 911 or not sit next to them. I'd get away from it. Yet when it comes to me as an alcoholic and my alcoholic mind, I keep inviting bedevilments in, think it's going to change that thing. And the only way they'll get resolved is with my God. On page 34 it says this, for those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether, forever. Right? Doesn't say a day at a time, it says forever. Stop altogether. We are assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. And this is what can sometimes separate rooms. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis, don't drink and go to meetings. Middle-of-the-road solution. put the plug in a jug. Anything that doesn't give me instructions on how to have a spiritual experience. We got those folks in AA. They mean well by the information they give us, but they're not me. They can quit on a non-spiritual basis. Sober softball, sober bowling, go to retreat after retreat after retreat, the men's retreats, all of those things. Some of them are great 12-steppers, too. They go get the drunk, bring them to a detox. But they're not the drunk on page 21 like me. They can quit upon a non-spiritual basis. And they look at me doing working with spiritual disciplines like I'm completely loony for all this inventory and all this prayer. Because they have the power of choice. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which we have already lost the power to choose whether we will drink or not. Have choice over the next drink. Have power over the next drink. When I'm going to start, when I'm not going to start. If that stuff has been removed, the chances are I do need a spiritual basis of life because I'm the guy on page 21. That even with a sufficient reason to stop drinking, I still go drink. When a doctor says, Pete, if you drink again, something terrible is going to happen to you, I get a second opinion.
Doctor's opinion. Operate. Yeah, I had a woman that went through my program. She was on her, she blew out one liver. She was on a second one. The second one was almost gone. They doctors were done with her. She needs something. And came to the, she's got 9 months sober.
Yeah.
Why? Because she has a relationship with God. Why? Because she works with others. She's of service. She's worked through the steps. I mean, she's a medical miracle. You know, to them, they're like looking at us like, wow. You know, it's not about us. It's about the power of God. It's about that relationship that she's built with God and to throw in herself into the program.
Page 35 says this. We got to get out of here. What sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink? So let's think about, till tomorrow, what sort of thinking is dominating me? Constantly on me. It's that undercurrent, the financial stuff, the sex stuff, the body image stuff, the relationship stuff, the job stuff, whatever it might be, that no matter what's going on, it shows up. And as a friend of mine describes it, like the carousel, he called it. And every once in a while, it shows up. There it is, the money thing. Then it goes away. I'm doing okay. It's still there. I can see it in my peripheral vision. It's on the horizon. And then it shows up again. And I'm tight again. And it goes by. What sort of thinking dominates? What's going on with us currently? I'm not talking about concerns. We all have concerns for our children, our relationship, our loved ones, our financial future. That's good. But then it goes from concern, like any asset taken to the extreme becomes a liability, to fear. And that's all I'm on. What sort of thinking is dominating me right now? Or perhaps I'm someone here this weekend who just can't stay sober. Welcome. You're in the right place. Mm-hmm. Treatment centers do great things. They put us back together. They stabilize you. But everyone leaves treatment. And there are plenty of people in AA who never went to treatment. You don't need treatment to be sober. And because you went to treatment doesn't mean you're an alcoholic either. Mm-hmm. Do we experience the body, the phenomenon called craving, the mental obsession, and this thing called the spiritual malady? The spirit never got sick. But my relationship with this power called God did. And it's almost feeling of a separation from God. Not literally, because you can't be separate from that which you already are. And when I feel separate from this power, it means I'm now in self-reliance. If I'm in self-reliance, that means my life is currently unmanageable. If my life is currently unmanageable, that means I'm in fear. And if I'm in fear, it's because I have current agnosticism. And you can spin that any way you want. It's just a vicious cycle. And at some point, I need relief. I get a drink, and I go, I'm good again. Okay. So that's all we got for tonight, guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.